Good morning, everybody. This is Dave Weiner, and it's Morning Coffee Notes coming to you live from Park City, Utah. I'm going to stop right by the side of the road on Highway 224, and in front of me is the Park City ski area. And, of course, there's no snow on the mountain, being August, oh my goodness, today is August the 14th, 2005. And, yeah, of course, there's no snow. But it is nice and cool here. I've heard reports about what's going on out on the East Coast, and they're boiling up in a massive, massive, massive heat wave. And, well, of course, we're not. I've had incredibly good weather ever since Bismarck, North Dakota. Bismarck, it was like, oh, it was ridiculously hot, and I had to keep driving. It was so hot I couldn't stop. I was, you know, at the end of a driving day, and so, you know, driving days end long before the sun goes down this time of year, especially as you get a little bit further north. But it was 100 degrees in Bismarck, and I didn't feel like going for my walk, and I didn't feel like hanging out in a hotel, so I put on a bunch more miles, about 100 more miles, and ended up in Dickinson, North Dakota, and there it was also 100 degrees, and I was staying in a pretty sleazy hotel, and I think that was the only day on this trip that I did not get to exercise. It just never cooled off, and it got dark. It was still in the pretty high 90s. I did exercise, of course, the next day. However, after that, the heat wave broke. Big thunderstorms coming through, and the next stop was in Billings, Montana, and by then it was already sort of chilled out a little bit, and then from then on, it's basically been in the mid, no higher than the mid 80s in the daytime, and usually gets down in the 60s at night, sometimes in the 50s. In Bozeman, it actually got down to the 40s. And it was nice. I mean, it, you know, this time of year, 40s feels like free air conditioning. And, it was nice to put a sweater on and sort of, oh yeah, that's right. That's what this feels like. You know, who remembers? All this is a preamble because right now it's a luxurious 68 degrees and it's 12:25. A little bit afternoon, and just got back from my daily walk, walking alongside a creek. McLeod Creek is what it's called, and that's a special kind of luxury. Wildflowers, really nice smells, and a nice cool breeze, and still can work up. It's still warm enough to work up a nice little sweat, but nah, you know, every so often you get a cool thing going on. No music, no audiobooks. I have three audio players and they're all broken. one of them is not really broken. I just don't like to use it because it's one of these little $50 deals that has 256 megabytes of RAM and very limited functionality. So like there's no way to pause something and resume. So you kind of pretty much have to listen all the way through. And that works fine for music, but it does not work for audiobooks. And then it runs off of a AAA battery. There's no reliable way to turn the damn thing off that I've found other than to pull the battery out. I never do that. And so the battery's always out. And it's not like when you start it up, the battery's out. It's when you start it up, the battery works and you think, okay, well, fine, the battery works. And then 5 minutes into the walk, you get a little thing says, oh, battery, out of battery, powering down. And then it actually says goodbye. And and I say goodbye to it. My Arcos has gotten really creepy, and it doesn't play audio anymore. And it needs, I think, a new operating system install. So I'm going to have to figure out how to do that. And until then, I thought I would use the iPod, and I still have one. I decided to get off of the iPod because I didn't like DRM, and I wanted to try living in, you know, Linux land, PDA land. And apparently, though, the iPod didn't like not being used all this time, and it had a very teeny weeny weak little audio signal. You could barely hear what it was saying, so no luck there. And so I've basically, for the last few days, have been taking silent walks, which actually is not too bad. I'm left with my thoughts, and if my thoughts are productive, then I have a good time. If my thoughts are swirling, I don't have such a good time. And today was one of those days when my thoughts were swirling. Just before taking the walk, I had a talk with Scoble. He had to go off to breakfast, so we're going to resume the talk a little bit later. We're talking about basically a relatively minor issue. It's not a major big deal, okay? However, it's sort of symbolic of how things are going, or how they have been going, with Microsoft and RSS. And I have mixed feelings about how Microsoft has been approaching RSS. I like the fact that they have, you know, in their marketing communications, have paid so much respect to RSS and to the way RSS works, and specifically to me too. You know, I'm like everybody else. I like recognition for what I've done, and they've been very generous with that, and I appreciate that. And I see that I have mixed feelings about it, because, you know, I've been to this place before with Microsoft, and quite a few times, not just once or twice, but a fair number of times. It's never really had a happy ending. And I don't think that's been to any fault of my own. Of course, I don't think that. And I can hear the trollers and my detractors out there saying, oh yeah, sure, you know, let's jump on Dave, right? Oh, their voices are in my head too, but I, you know, whatever. So, you know, let's go through some of those. I don't need to go through them all, but, and in fact, the one that I think is most relevant here is the experience with Microsoft Internet Explorer in 1995, 1996, and into 97. As they were launching their great, you know, web initiative, where their goal was to basically become the number one browser, displacing Netscape, which of course they did. And at the time I was generally, well, first, I, you know, I can point you to the piece where I got my first, look at the Microsoft browser, and it was a surprise. I didn't like, you know, maybe it wasn't the first browser, but it was the first Mac browser. And the fact that they had a Mac browser at all was a surprise. And it was a really good piece of software. And that was how they were approaching it. They were saying, well, we're going to compete in this market by producing a better browser. And they hired a team of people led by Don Bradford. And they worked out of Silicon Valley. And Don had come from Claris, where he was working on, I think it was Claris Works. Don was a UI guy, and they focused on making the thing, well, I don't know if he was a UI guy, that might not be fair, but they focused on the user interface, and they did a damn good job. They also focused on, adopting, initiatives that came from independent developers, and they picked up quite a few ideas for me, and implemented them in the browser with my help and my support, very enthusiastic support. And that was cool. And at the same time, I was talking regularly with the people on the Windows side that were working on the browser, not as closely, because at the time I wasn't a Windows user. And so I could only sort of like talk about like general web things and whatnot. It wasn't until later that I became a Windows user that we started doing some other things in other areas of Microsoft. The point being is that when Microsoft wasn't on top, and when they wanted desperately to get on top, they were very open and very anxious to work with developers, and very effective at it too. They could really do it, and I felt that it was a good thing because Netscape wasn't really good at it. But that's not to say Netscape didn't try. They did. They implemented a technology that I had called menu sharing, and I really appreciated that. But in general, Netscape didn't, you know, wasn't as mature an organization, and I felt they needed competition, badly needed competition, or maybe put a better way is that we needed them to have competition. And so that was one of the reasons why I supported Microsoft's entry in there. Okay, so fast forward to 2000, oh, well, actually, in the interim, then Microsoft, of course, did become the dominant browser, and I don't think that necessarily it was a conscious thing that they changed, but you know, because Bradford and Slivka, Ben Slivka, who was the sort of lead developer on the Windows side of Internet Explorer, both left. And they didn't leave behind their legacy of working with independent developers. And Microsoft is number one in browsers, dominating and hugely dominant in browsers. Well, I can't tell you why they didn't work with developers. I have theory, you know, that basically they didn't feel they needed our help. And so they didn't. And, so our calls never got answered. You know, ideas that we had for improving the browser never got implemented, never got heard. And then it got worse. They implemented a thing called smart tags, which, just leave it at saying that it was an abomination. It was horrible what that would have done to the web. And we had to basically make a huge public issue out of it. And we got a lot of support. You know, and basically they withdrew the feature, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say that it was a friendly relationship at all. I would say we were adversaries. We were like, they were enemies. I mean, they were going to kill the web basically with smart tags, in my opinion, had it gone forward. So for whatever reason in 2005, they want to work with developers again, and that's good. I think that's fine. I think, and what they want to work with us on is RSS. At least that's what they say. And, but all the time having had the experience with the sort of flip flop, and it's not the only time that it's happened. It happened with, other things as well that, you know, at first they want to work with you, then they get, going and they don't want to work with you, and you know it's easier not to fight them on it basically. And that's what I did with SOAP, was once I realized that that they wanted to do it themselves, I just sort of stepped back and didn't say anything, you know. Not much saying anything wouldn't have done them a whole lot of good, and so I didn't, and for the most part was supportive of SOAP because you know, even in a more complicated, more dilute form, it was still a good thing to have Microsoft support, even though, in my opinion, it didn't really go anywhere. So now in 2005, they want to work with developers, but we can't overlook the experience that we've had. And one has to be, you know, sort of aware that there's a good possibility that when all's said and done, once they get, you know, RSS, get on top of RSS, that they're not going to care what we think anymore. And constantly watching out for that, and then thinking that we see signs that that's already true. See, the question is, how much do they want to work with us? And I'm going to go into the various different levels of working with us that they could do, versus how much do they want to pay lip service to the idea of working with us so that any objections that we might have to what they're doing would be seen as, you know, us attacking them or being difficult or hard to work with. You know, are we being spun or are they being sincere? And, you know, and are they, you know, if we're being spun, are they aware that they're doing the spin or is it just corporate groupthink that leads them there? You know, my guess is that it's going to be hard for them to escape the pattern that they're in. Yet RSS, if they really want to support RSS, if they really want to use an old sort of dangerous term, if they really want to embrace it, they have to let RSS embrace them. It has to be a two-way thing. And that means that they have to adopt some different ways of working with the world. And it's going to be difficult for them to do it. And they are resisting doing that. The question is, first of all, okay, I don't think that they want to work with me. They have never asked me a question about, you know, hey, how should we do this? When the question has come up, when I've had an opinion about how they should do something, I don't think they've ever done what I thought that they should do, or I don't think they've really ever seriously considered doing what I thought that they should do. At one point in a conversation, I asked one of the people, I said, well, what is it you want me to do? And it was dead air. I don't think he'd ever thought about it. I don't think it had ever been crystallized. What exactly do they want me to do? I think what they want me to do is to say nice words about what they're doing. I don't think they want me to do anything more. So I can accept that. And I've certainly learned to accept that from a fair number of other players in RSS land, especially tech companies. Like, for example, Apple. I've not had one word with Apple about how they're doing RSS. I've only made public statements about it. I've tried, not very hard, but I've tried to open a private dialogue with them. Haven't gotten anywhere with it. So, you know, there's a case where, you know, I can live with that. You know, basically I have to. What choice do I have? They clearly don't want any input from me. They don't even want to not listen to input from me. They just don't want it. Or at least if there's no indication that they want it. Maybe they do, but I don't know. Then the next question is, how much input do they want from RSS? Now, that's a weird question, right? If you're supporting RSS, it seems to me that you want, like, infinite amount of input from RSS. In other words, you want to do RSS, period. That's it. You just want to do RSS. But that's an interesting question, because RSS, you know, okay, then don't you think you should call it RSS? Well, they don't think so. There's a convention of using the white on orange XML icon to represent your RSS feeds. Don't you think you should use that? I do. Yahoo does. Almost every publication does. I can't think of one that doesn't use the... Oh, actually, I can. But most of them do, especially the big ones do use the white on orange XML button. Some of them have changed to RSS. I'm not happy about that, but it's better than nothing. But no, they don't want to do that. Then the question is, how much will their RSS look like when it's deployed in various formats, forms and contexts? How much will it actually look like RSS? And, you know, will it conform to the spec? My guess is that it will always conform to the spec. But there's a lot of leeway in terms of what it can look like and still conform to the spec. And my guess is that over time, that will bend quite a bit. And if you were to look at to see what kind of RSS they're consuming a year from now and 2 years from now, unless something radically changes at Microsoft in the way they do things, okay, right, I suspect that you won't recognize the RSS that they're parsing 2 years from now. Something radically is going to have to change there in order for that to happen. Is there a will for that change? Now here's the controversial point. I don't see it. I don't see the will at that company to change. Would I like to see it? Yeah, I would like to see it. We talked about things like this when I was there in April. We talked about a concept called Team RSS. And Team RSS is something that crosses corporate boundaries. It isn't something that exists inside of Microsoft. At least that's my opinion. I would love to hear them say that publicly, that Team RSS is a concept that exists. It's broader. It's bigger than Microsoft. I insist that it is, that any company, any organization, any individual that supports RSS is part of the team, and that we're all working for the furtherance of a format for syndicating content, and that we all have an interest in having that be a good, strong, I hate to use the word, but a good, strong standard, that it be something that doesn't get deviated from very often. And then when features get added, that people look to see how other people did it, and they they do it the same way. They do it the same way because there's already a base of software out there that understands that way of doing things. Now, this is not the way of large software companies. Large software companies tend to think of themselves as being the whole world. And it's a natural thing for them to do because, you know, if you work at a large company like Microsoft, 99% of the people that you come in contact with work at your company. And I would say 99.99999999% of your time is spent dealing with Microsoft people. So the problems of the rest of the world outside of your company, are not important. You're not going to get your raise by working with somebody outside of your company or even with working with a customer. It isn't how it happens. So the culture, let's put it this way. RSS itself really doesn't need a raise. It's not looking for promotion. Its interest is in its integrity and staying and continuing to mean something. And why do I think that Microsoft will deviate just following natural course of events? Because that's what I've seen. That's what happened with SOAP. SOAP started out in 1998 as a very simple thing, very easy to implement, very easy to understand. And it evolved as more and more people had their say in what, okay, we want SOAP to be this and this and this and this. Never mind that all those things weren't necessarily different things. They were just different ways of doing the same thing. Well, we're embarking. This whole business about web feeds is an exact parallel to that. In other words, they want to say, okay, it's not RSS that we're dealing with. We're dealing with things called web feeds. Why? Well, because there are other formats. There's Atom, and there may be others later. They may even come out with some of them themselves. So they want an umbrella that is more general, that isn't specific to RSS. Even though the world agrees that RSS is it, Atom, I don't have to say anything about Atom. I mean, the contest is so far gone in RSS's favor that there isn't a need to even address the issue until Microsoft comes along and says that we need to address the issue. Now, I believe I'm only going to be willing to discuss this so long because I honestly don't think that it matters what Microsoft does here. I think that ultimately that they can go ahead and call it whatever they want. They can call it Swiss cheese. They can call it the man in the moon. They can call it the clouds over Park City. I mean, I'm just looking around. They can call it the farm on the other side of Highway 224. They can call it whatever they want. The fact is that if they don't call it RSS, then they're not going to be able to say that they support RSS because everybody's going to look and say, well, where's the RSS? And they say, well, Microsoft doesn't call it RSS. And you know how much attention people are going to pay to that? Nothing. They're not going to care. Outside of the software industry, people just simply don't care about what some random person at Microsoft thinks. And I'm sorry, unfortunately. They don't care what I think either. Okay? It's not anything that is special about you or me or anybody else. They don't really care. You know, they've heard about RSS, though. And they're okay with that. They're not sure what it is. But it's got a good start. And so that's where it ought to start. So that's why we're watching carefully to see what they do here. That's why it's an interesting discussion. To Scobel, that's why you have a chance to actually make a difference, because the Microsoft reaction to what I've said so far, I understand, is that they're being attacked. That's what they think. And, you know, I took that with me on my walk and I said, okay, you know, if you want to parse it that way, it's possible to do that. In other words, if you have a set of beliefs and a way of looking at the world and somebody's asking you to look at the world differently, is it okay to characterize that as an attack? I suppose you could say that it is, because it depends on how much value you associate with your unique way of looking at the world. If you don't want to change the way you look at the world, you're going to put up big defenses against anything that asks you to look at the world a different way. However, I'm offended when they call it an attack because I feel like they aren't listening. Because if they listened, they would hear that I'm not attacking them. It's frustrating for me because all along I've been asking them to listen to me. And that's how they always tune me out, is they always say, oh, he's attacking us. So we don't have to listen to it because he's attacking us. And, well, they did a whole swallow of listening to me. That was the irony of it, is after not listening to me for so long, I mean, basically between 1998 and 2005, a good 7 years, they didn't listen to anything I said. And then they did a whole huge amount of listening, all in one very short period of time, like 6 months. They swallowed everything that I was saying, and they sort of lapped it up, and they said, yeah, we're going to do that. And then they go back to, oh, he's attacking us. Well, that's incongruous. How could it be? I mean, you thought I was attacking before, but then you decided that all this stuff was good and you're going to do it. So was I really attacking you before? No. Honestly, I was trying to help. You know why? Here's how you got to look at it, okay? I'm not going to get, if there's growth in the software industry, which I strongly believe that's what RSS can do for the industry, and I believe that it is doing it for the industry, and if allowed to continue, it really will do it in a huge way, is what it's doing is it's making things grow. Now, when things grow, a company the size of Microsoft gets an enormous percentage of that growth. Something on the order of, let's say, 40% of that growth goes to Microsoft. So why fight it? This is going to be make your stock options worth something. It's going to mean that you might get a promotion. It means that you're going to do some new, might be able to do some new things, some more interesting things. Companies that grow are interesting places to be. As you've probably found out in the last few years, the companies that don't grow are not interesting places to be. And people move on. People leave companies like that. Companies that are growing attract new people. They attract interesting people who want to do interesting things. So I encourage you, don't fight this. Please, just listen. Let's get through this. Let's not throw out the agreement that we have already. And then let's do something that's even harder, okay? And let's figure out a mechanism for us to work together, okay? And when I say us, that means the publishers, the technology companies, the political parties, you know, government agencies, you name it, anybody that produces information or consumes information, let's set up a framework where we actually get to work with each other. That's going to be the historic thing. That's going to be the hardest thing we have to do. Before we get there, we have to learn how to take what's been given to us and not screw around with it. So, yeah, that's hard to do, and it's hard to listen to that, but that's what's got to happen. So, anyway, that's a morning coffee notes for you. How long have we been doing this? Hold on. It has been 27 minutes. Not bad. So it's going to be about a half hour all told. So anyway, that's it. Let's hear what's on the CD player. Not a bad ending, huh?